Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Black Women Talk, the weekly podcast about the taboo topics that we all desperately try to avoid, but deep down really want to discuss. Yes, I'm talking about politics, race, sex, and religion, and anything else that we deem needs to be covered and discussed. Join us every Monday, 8 p.m., right here at blogtalkradio.com/Black Women Talk with Rhonda and Renee.
Yeah, yeah, enough of that. Just play the theme song.
How you doing?
I'm good. I'm doing good. I'm doing good. So much has happened. What's been going on with you?
Oh, gosh, just a lot of traveling, but I'm good. I'm going on vacation in the next few days, and I'm
going to
go off the grid. I'm going off the grid. Nowhere special, just going home, going to Texas.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Mama, I said hi.
I'll do that.
Awesome. Good, good. Well, I am not going on vacation. So, let's see what's going on. Well, actually, for those of you that listen to podcasts, I was just released today. I'm on another podcast called The Bike Nerds, where I'm talking about my bicycling group / business, Bicycling in the City. So you can check that out. I'll post it on my page and maybe on the Facebook page for Black Women Talk. I was listening to part of it today. I sound like I know what I'm talking about, so that was kind of fun to do that podcast.
Okay.
You know how you have you ever done an interview and you just wonder, like, I wonder what I was talking about at the end of it? And then
well,
you go back and
I listened,
oh.
Yeah, I listened to myself the other day and I was like, wow, you know I'm from the South. There's no mistaking. You know, I have the country accent. It's not going anywhere. It is what it is. Please love me because I can't do anything
about it.
That
is so funny. You're so funny. So that's what's been going on, and I'm working on that. And in the news, I think we all have heard, if you haven't seen, I haven't watched BET in a really long time. When people talk about Gabrielle Union's show, I watch it on Netflix, so I don't even know what channel BET is on because I got rid of cable. But I know BET Awards were last night. Everybody is talking about the speech that Jesse Williams gave. So that was really good. I know you posted it. That's how I saw it anyway, that you posted a clip of it. And
yeah.
Really good. Very good speech. I thought it was it might tie in a little bit to tonight's topic. A little bit.
Yeah, he did make a comment. So. Yeah, he made a comment about gentrification.
Oh, okay.
Well, gentrifying. I think he used the term gentrifying.
Gentrifying, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So that happened. And then if we all know that Brexit this weekend, where Great Britain left the European Union over the weekend, oddly enough or interestingly enough, apparently, after people voted, they then went to Google and looked up what Brexit actually was in England, which I thought was scary.
Interesting.
That they had
well, if
you, something. They didn't know what
yeah,
it was.
It's really not easy to distinguish when I was reading it. It looks like you said, it didn't look right, but it's BR and then British exit merged together,
yes.
And that was kind of weird.
Yeah.
So.
But I think the fact that they voted and then looked it up was the problem that I was having. Like, yeah, maybe you should have done that before you voted for Brexit. But very interesting, because it's such an interesting parallel to what Trump is, Donald Trump is asking, which is, you know, make America great again. And part of their reasoning for leaving was immigration. And that they have, because they're part of the European Union, they have to take in people from other countries in the European Union. And they don't want to do that anymore, much like America,
I was just going to say that, you know, it's a, they actually have a limit on how many people they, that they want to come. It's not like it's completely open. Especially with the Syrians coming in, there is an X amount until they meet that limit. But I don't really understand why they don't want to include other people, even, you know, with the limit. So,
yeah,
I see more impact on the British pound and financially. I'm not sure what the racial implications are, if there are any. But I'm to be honest, I really don't understand it.
Why they left, or why they, what part?
What impact it has, you know?
Oh,
what were they trying to accomplish? What? Because now everybody's trying to backpedal. Like, of course, you just explained because they don't want so many immigrants coming into their country. But okay, but there's always been a limit, and it is because we, you know, people that are part of the EU have more financial stability, have an ability to accommodate more countries. And it's, I guess they just don't want to get into that political environment or have terrorists. I'm really not sure.
Yeah, that's what I took from it, is that they didn't want to get into the, they just don't want to accept any more black and brown people, I'll just say it, to the country. I'm just tired of it. I don't want to be politically correct either. I'm like Donald Trump. Like, I'm just, so they don't want to accept any more black and brown people, which I find extremely frustrating and hypocritical, since no one asked England to come to any of the places they colonized. I'm just going to drop that and then go on. So I think that's an issue for me, is that now all of a sudden it's like, well, we don't want these people. Well, we didn't ask you to come to any place that you've been either and take it over and Christianize it and colonize it and, you know, make us assimilate. So, yeah. I'm not understanding fully, but what I do know is that because they left, it's sort of like, I guess it would be like Texas or South Carolina leaving, and so now you don't have the funding that you had before. So that's going to be one of the impacts that they're going to see, I think, rather quickly, is they don't have the support of the rest of the union like they did before financially. And there were definitely some towns and cities that were dependent upon that I don't know Great Britain has, or England has, figured out what they're going to do to make sure those people survive in those cities and towns. So that's something that I think should have been put out there. Like, how are you, and not just promises, not political promises of, yeah, we got you, but like, really, what are you going to do when you leave, and how are we going to, you know, keep our businesses, our homes, our whatever funded if you leave the union?
Yeah.
So that's the fun part of the news, I guess. So tonight,
well, I want to back up. I just want to back up just a little bit, Renee, because I think Jesse Williams said some very, I'm sure most people have seen it in social media, but he said some very interesting things. And one of his, in his speech, he did say that his awards is also for black women in particular, who spent their lifetime dedicated to nurturing everyone but themselves.
Yes.
And he was making a commitment that we can, in terms of men can, and we'll do better for you. Also, I thought was really interesting He said, now the thing is, though, all of us are here getting money. That alone isn't going to stop this. All right, now dedicating our lives to getting money just to give it right back for someone's brand on our body. When we spend centuries praying with brands on our bodies, and now we pray to get paid for brands on our bodies. I thought that was so deep in terms of that is where we are. We're not even trying to get beyond having a name brand to wear. Mm-hmm. And all
yep.
these years we've been branded by, it's just, I can't even really fully grasp the depth of what he's talking about in terms of branding. Like, of course, branding in terms of getting whipped in your back during slavery. We've got no brands on us being branded in terms of what has been racially done to us and mentally afflicted upon us to be thinking a certain
mm-hmm.
way. We are just, it's just, I thought that was really profound in a lot
mm-hmm.
of the things that he's saying. And for us and for them saying, there's another part where he said, and let's get a couple of things straight, just a little side note. The burden of the brutalized is not to comfort the bystander. That's not our job, all right? Stop with all that. If you have a critique for the resistance, for our resistance, then you better have an established record of critique of our oppression. If you have no interest, in equal rights for black people, then do not make suggestions to those who do. Sit down. And I thought that was like, a lot of times
yeah.
people beyond us have all of these ideas of what we should or shouldn't be doing, and you need to do this, and they're really not even interested in having equal rights for us at all. You're just talking.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And he said, we've been floating this country on credit for centuries, you know, and we've done watching and waiting while this invention called whiteness uses and abuses us, burying black people out of sight and out of mind while extracting our culture, our dollars, our entertainment like oil, black gold, ghettoizing and demeaning our creation, then stealing them, gentrifying our genius. That is what we were going to be talking about today. Gentrification, but he's on a deeper level talking about gentrifying our genius and then trying us on like costumes before discarding our body like vines of strange fruit. The thing is that just because we're magic, it doesn't mean we're not real. So it was. I watched it live. I happened to be watching BET that night, and Renee, I used to hate parts of BET, but last night I have to commend. They did a really good job in terms of paying tribute and homage to Prince, and also Beyonce opening up the whole show with, gosh, what's the name of her? I just forgot, just lost
Lamar
it.
Kendrick.
But it, huh?
Lamar Kendrick or Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah. But I forgot the name of the Freedom. Freedom, she was talking
Freedom.
About. Freedom, that's the name of her song. And she did it almost like the video with her and Kendrick Lamar. But the whole show was really uplifting and moving. And I feel like Prince definitely would have been proud, and I was proud to watch the whole show and really excited about everything. So enough, like you said, of the news. But I definitely want to talk about that in opening up the show because I thought it was very profound and powerful.
It was. I thought Jesse Williams did a really good job with his speech and what he said, the way he said it. And I agree. There are a lot of people who want to supposedly help, I guess that's what they're saying, but they're not ever asking the people who are there, who are dealing with it, what would be actually helpful, what would they actually like. They're coming in and telling people what they want. You know, this is what you should want so that you can be more like us and be better, you know. And the assumption is always that it's not okay the way it is. So that's a huge problem that we have. which is, I think, where gentrification comes in. So tonight, that's what we're going to be talking about is gentrification. And you can, if you'd like to be a part of the conversation, you can tweet at Black Women Talk. You can hit us up on Facebook at Black Women Talk. You can also call in. The number is 646-668-2712. That's 646-668-2712. So I think Rhonda and I both did some research on gentrification because, you know, sometimes we throw a lot of words around. We think they know what they mean. Like, you're just using the word. And then you go look it up and you're like, huh, that's not what that means at all. Or it has a much deeper meaning than what you ever thought it meant. So I know when I talked to you earlier today, you were like, yeah, I was looking it up. And then I was looking it up too. So
what did you find about
gentrification?
Well, I thought it was a concept that had originated in the United States, and apparently it had not.
Right, me too.
So I was like, wow, this is like just an interesting concept of, I don't think initially, when you're looking at the historical value of it, I don't think it was really set out to prey on people of a different color. I think that it was a concept or idea to make things better. And I think under the wrong hands can be misused. And mm-hmm. I think that's where it has, I think in terms of where it impacts us as Black people the most, it is viewed as very negative because mm-hmm. of its negative impact. But that's what I think why you and I wanted to talk about it too. It's just definitely the negative impact that it has on communities, particularly urban communities. And that negative impact on Black people or poor people, because I think it happens where there's an opportunity to make money. If you're poor money don't have is not, you know, if you're poor, it doesn't have a color. You're just poor, white, black, whatever.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing is that when it first became, I think it seems like. It wasn't a racial issue. It was more of an economic issue where middle class mm-hmm. People were moving into lower class working areas, neighborhoods, and it was displacing them because, you know, they come in and then they buy up the homes or they buy up the property or whatever, and now the lower class people can't afford to live there anymore, and so they get displaced. And, you know, this was happening in England, in London, where it's pretty, you know, where the race is pretty homogenous. So it became more racial here, and that's why you'll hear people say that sometimes, like, well, it's not really racial because it is socioeconomic, but because everything in America, quite honestly, is based on race in some fashion or form, it did become racial because it turned out that the people who were in the lower, that had the least money, turned out to be more Black and brown people, and the people who were wealthier were more or less white people. And so as they came into these neighborhoods, it was displacing these people. So it's money and it's race here, which is why you see people kind of, you know, upset about it. It's like, I've been here all this time. Nobody's ever paid attention to this neighborhood. Now all of a sudden, I can't live here. Why? What happened? And I live in D.C. D.C. is one of the fastest gentrifying cities in America right now. It has gone through gentrification over the last 5 years that has been unbelievable. Seeing it happen is it's astonishing. The words that come up, it's just astonishing. And I'm a native. It's rare to meet a Washingtonian that actually grew up here. Most people that live here are from somewhere else. So I'm one of the few people, I always joke, like there's four natives here, me and my mom, and like two other people haven't met yet. But but there's not a lot of us that are actually from D.C., born and raised. And, you know, we meet these people who come, and a lot of people come here for the government, and they come here, you know, with the administration, and they're from, you know, they're from all over the U.S., and they come here. They're here probably 4 to 8 years because they come with the administration, and everything has to change. Everything. It's unbelievable.
I'm sorry, Renee. I was just having a question. Like, I'm sitting here thinking, like, gentrification just doesn't happen. There has to be. I mean, from my experience, and I never grew up in the city, Yeah, I had to do a lot of research to understand and educate myself about gentrification. But from what I'm just looking at and reading and thinking in terms of, and I know from somewhat of an experience, is that when you don't have a job, when you're not paying your taxes, when you're not working together, because I think maybe like in the 50s and 60s, black families were much more accommodating and working with each other and trying to help each other, and that's not happening as much as anymore. And I'm wondering what is causing, other than the fact that, yeah, a lot of people need to come to Washington, D.C. to get jobs, but if the opportunity isn't there, like, you know, people, you know, there's not land or liens on people's property or homes, then how are people able to come in and just, it's not like they just taking the land order. Help me understand.
Both, yes.
Okay.
Both. So what I've seen happen over the, and I'll go back. I would say it's probably been happening over the past 20 years, slowly, but you've sort of rapidly happened, I would say, over the last 5 to 7 years. And so D.C., for people that don't know, and I'm a Bay, so I don't want to insult anybody, but I often have to explain this because people don't understand D.C. or its politics. But D.C. is basically a colony. It is not a state. It's a district. It is not as, we don't have Seattle either. I've had people literally ask me, like, are you in Seattle? No, I'm in the other Washington. So it's a district.
Oh, wow.
You don't have any voting power. And we pay taxes. That's crappy. We also, D.C. residents also do not own their land. So you can buy a house, but the land is run by the federal government. I mean, the land is owned by federal government. We have a mayor. We have a city council. And they sort of run D.C., except Congress can come in and tell them, nah, we know you voted for that. But we want you to have this. So that happens too. So there's a lot of interesting parts in D.C. So, yes, it can happen that people can come in and take your stuff and just move in. Also happens that it was left kind of empty. So for years, D.C., people used to call it Chocolate City. It was 75% black for years and years and years. And there were white people here one time before people get on like, it was white. It was. Then there was a big white flight. Everybody moved out to the suburbs. It was convinced that you didn't want to be in the cities because that's where the black and brown and the bad people were. And so everybody moved out to the suburbs, far away from the jobs that they worked in the city. So they worked for the government in the city, but they moved out to Reston and Herndon and all these cities where it takes you an hour and 20 minutes in traffic. And D.C. always has traffic, always. At midnight, there's traffic. On Sunday at 4, there's traffic. There's always traffic in D.C. So they moved out there, and then they had to commute in. Well, suddenly somebody started to look at this city and they started planning because D.C. is a beautiful city. And when it's fixed up like it is now, it's like, wow, you know, I didn't even know that was there. There were parts of the city that people didn't go to. There were parts of the city black folks didn't go to. There were parts they didn't go to because there were white people there, and it's scary, quite honestly. Black folks are scared of some white folks. As much as they want to run from us, there are places we didn't go because we knew if something happened, we were going to be blamed for it. And then there's parts of the city where black folks were that black folks didn't go to because you could get shot. That was just how it was. So people started moving back in, and what happens is it's sort of like it's sort of a snowball effect. Somebody will come in, a non-black person will come in and say, wow, you know what, I can buy a house over here for $50,000 as opposed to moving, you know, far away from my job and spending $500,000, and I could be right here in the city and take the metro and get to work. And so you need a couple of people like that who are willing to cross the color line, and once they do, they all come. And that's how it happens. It just happens like that. So there are parts of the city that, like, I'll take my mom and my grandmother through, like, every couple of weeks because it changes seemingly that fast. It's totally different 2 weeks from today that wasn't there 2 weeks ago. And you'll go through the city and you'll see all these restaurants. Like, 30 years ago, we didn't have restaurants in D.C. I live in a neighborhood where I grew up, and we didn't have a bank or a grocery store until the 90s. That's crazy.
Wow.
People had to go to Maryland, or they had to go to a totally different, or Virginia. They could not go to a grocery store in this area. You could not bank in this part of the city. It just didn't exist. So now it's switching over. And there were other parts of the city like that. It just didn't have it. They had corner stores. You could go to a carryout and yell at somebody through plexiglass and get Chinese food. You might find a McDonald's or a Popeyes, but there were no sit-down restaurants, none, nothing like that. And suddenly, a few white people moved in, and everything has completely been different. I'm not going to lie, it's nice. But what happens at the same time is that the people who were there, they don't do it for the people who are there. That's the first problem. It's not done for the residents who are there. The second part is that it changes the whole character of the area. So everything changes to accommodate these non-residents, these people who weren't there last year, who weren't there last month. It all changes because they want it to be different. And they don't like the way it is. It's done under the guise of it should be, I want it to be nicer, but it doesn't take into account the people that are there already and that you didn't want to make it nicer just for them. It's being made nicer for you. And that's your nicer, not necessarily their nicer.
You're saying that because this being like in the way they're going about gentrifying or trying to beautify or make this a more wealthy or nicer neighborhood has nothing to do with, you know, they're not taking into consideration the displacement through rent or the price increase,
no.
The loss of affordable housing, the homelessness. I see both sides of it because I think that if that opportunity was presented to anyone that had money, I think that most would do it.
Yeah, they would. Yeah, and that's the rub is that I go through DC now and I'm amazed. You know, like, and I'll take something simple because I'm in this industry. I'm in the bike industry, and there was a one of the things that was huge here is that everybody wanted bike lanes. People have been biking here for decades. That's not new. But when the city started to switch over and we saw more white people coming into the city, not into the parts where they already were, but deep into the city where most black people were, all of a sudden they needed bike lanes. They needed protected bike lanes. They needed it was just all these bike lanes need to be brought in, and they lobbied and they fought and I give it to you, they will fight for some stuff. I wish black people fought for things like white people do. It is unbelievable the stuff they will fight for. You're just like, is that really an issue? That is an issue to them, and they are going to get it. So they fought for these bike lanes. So right down Pennsylvania Avenue, going up to the White House, there are two huge protected bike lanes. No one can drive in them. You can't U-turn in them. It is specifically for the bikes. That's it. That was not there 5 years ago. but they fought for that. They needed to have it because they couldn't ride in the street with the other cars. They needed to have this lane. And so they, you know, they get all those things, but you come over here to where I live, there's not one bike lane, not one. And so I have a hard time when someone asks me, like, hey, aren't you fighting for these bike lanes over here? I'm like, no, I really don't care because I don't have any where I am. You don't need another bike lane where you are. I swear to Jesus, you don't. There, you could take a different route. You could get on the subway. You could walk. I have nothing over here, zero. So I'm not fighting for not near another bike lane that's in a city, that's in a part of the city that I don't live in. I'm just not. That doesn't go well with the bike industry. But I see. But there's a problem with that. If you never fight for it in other areas and it's only being fought for in the areas where that group of people live and reside, and you don't fight for it all over the entire city. You had a question?
Well, I was just thinking, I mean, so I guess I'm trying to understand your, you know, your dislike or not, no interest of having a bike lane. Is that like a signal to you? It's like if there's a start of a bike lane, this is an indication or a sign of their way of life is infiltrating into a different way of life, and therefore this is the start of the gentrification, if you will.
And it is. And most Black people will tell you that there's a definite there's a pattern that I noticed, and I kind of joke about it, but it's very serious. And I was in a meeting for we have bike share here, and a lot of tourists use it, a lot of residents use it. It's a nice way to get around the city, especially when Metro right now is going through their renovation of the tracks and stuff like that. But they had been talking, we have a lot of these bike share systems like they do in New York, like they do in Philly now, where you go and you rent a bike. There are some here in the area. There's no bike lanes here, but there are a few here in the ward I live in. So I was in this meeting, and they were talking about putting some in some different parts of this same ward. D.C. is broken down into 8 wards, and I live in Ward 8. Ward 8 and Ward 7 are mostly Black wards, and a little bit, I think, of Ward 5. But anyway, but those are the 2 mostly Black wards. And so they're talking about putting some bike shares in Ward 8. And I asked them, I said, so are you going to be gentrifying that area? Because I just wanted to ask straight out, because we like to tiptoe around things. That drives me nuts. I'm like, what are we doing? And so, you know, they were like, no, we're putting those there for the residents. To go where? To do what? Because they don't connect to anything. Because we don't have a lot over here, where are they going to? Like, what is it connecting to? And so they stopped and paused for a minute. They didn't really have an answer. And they said, well, you know, we'll connect to the other, you know, to the metro and things like that. And I said, okay. I said, so this area is not getting a store or new condos or something like that. And they didn't answer me. I said, okay. I said, are you doing this for funding? Because I'm trying to get to the heart of this. I want to know why all of a sudden Ward 8 is getting these bike shares out of nowhere when it was never, you know, considered. And so I didn't get an answer, and I said, because this is what I'm seeing. Typically, if there's a bike lane or something biking coming along that we didn't ask for, the next thing that happens is we get a coffee shop. There's some, and it's not a Starbucks. It's one of those no-name coffee shops, independent ones, I should say, independent coffee shop. And then the next thing, there's some dog studio, or dog park, and then there's a hot yoga studio, and then there's a Whole Foods, and suddenly you can't live there. Is that what's about to happen? And they kept saying, no, we're just putting this there for the residents in the neighborhood. But that's the trend. That's what typically happens. There's some bike lanes or bike share, and then there's this growth of stuff that comes, and you have condos. They do the multi, and they all look the same. They're not even unique or original. it's kind of the same looking thing. It's a bunch of condos, and you know, there's some grocery store, there's a Chipotle, there's a hot yoga studio, there's some doggy thing, and then really the apartments are too expensive for the residents who've been there for life to live in. The property taxes go up, and suddenly you can't live in your house.
So what would you propose, knowing all this happens, is what would you propose that people living in Ward 8, which you see that there's a potential for gentrification to be on the horizon, what would you propose to the citizens of that ward to do? How do you stop something like that? And I guess I'm taking it in terms of, okay, like, evidently, it has to be residents are not actively voting, or are you saying that their votes don't really matter and you have government officials doing something, you know, well, it's kind of blatant, but what do you do to stop gentrification?
I don't know that it necessarily needs to stop in that sense. I'm doing the air quotes so you can't see me. I'm not sure it needs to stop.
Okay.
I think it needs to be monitored, maybe is a better word. I think you do in areas that need it. I think you do need to bring in grocery stores. You do need a sit down restaurant. For people to say, you know, we're not going to come over there. Because, and I've heard this in civic meetings, well, you know, we're not coming over here because black people don't eat out. What? We don't? You know, so you, when did that happen?
Renee, you said something very key. You said something very key. That when they want something, they're asking for it, which leads me to believe that the citizens of that community don't necessarily care about their community. Because if you're voting for it, if you're asking for it, you should be getting it because you paid taxes for it.
You would think that, yes. you would think that. That's how it should happen. But it doesn't quite work that way, unfortunately. We had, I'll give this example. Walmart, there was a deal with Walmart not too far from where my mom lives up a hill, and it had been going on for years. There was a strip mall area that was there. It had a CVS. It had a couple of two laundromats, I think, a liquor store, nothing that you would drive over to see. But it served the neighborhood. The laundromat served the people in the apartments. The CVS served those people, you know, the medications they needed, or, whatever, like CVS does. There were a couple other, like, discount stores, some hair salons, that kind of thing. So there was a whole deal that had been in the works for Walmart to come. It was supposed to bring all of these jobs. It was going to be one of those multi-mixed communities with apartments, blah, 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 that was coming. And one store was called Discount Mart. They refused to leave. Everybody else had left except CVS. CVS said it was staying, too, because they owned the building. But Discount Mart did not want to leave, and they held up this deal for 2 years. Everybody was like, Walmart's coming, it's going to bring jobs, blah, blah, blah. The guy finally gave in. He gave up the store. It seemed like right after he said he was leaving, the bulldozers came in and knocked everything down. I guess it was about 6 months ago, Walmart pulled out. They just said, you know, we've built some stores in some other areas already, and we just see that they're not as profitable, so we're not coming to Southeast. That was it. I don't know if the mayor sued. I don't know. She came on TV, and she did a good speech about how pissed off she was, but I don't know if she did anything. I don't even know if she's been to Southeast. So it was heartbreaking because all of those business owners, and these were not Barney's. This was not Nordstrom. It wasn't like that. But all of these business owners had businesses that are now just gone. And the residents there are saying, you know what, I have to get on a bus now with my dirty laundry to go to a laundromat because they took the only laundromat in town, in the area. That kind of stuff doesn't happen in other parts of the city. I don't know if we're not complaining enough. We're not down at the, you know, we don't have time maybe to be down at the city council office. I mean, I see people when, I'm telling you, when it's a bike issue, they get people together, they go down there with signs, they pick it. I mean, it's unbelievable what they'll do for a bike lane that we're not doing for, you know, against Walmart. Nobody really got, I don't know what happened with it, honestly. I have no idea if we're suing them for, you know, breach of contract. I don't know. I have no idea. And now that land is just sitting. It's just a big old empty spot. So, but I know those kind of things wouldn't happen in other neighborhoods. Other people would have fought for that, or Walmart wouldn't have pulled out in the first place. So there's a, I don't know.
I'm still scratching my head. Like if people are concerned about the community and are going to the city council, I know that, you know, apparently it seems like what you're saying is that you don't mind gentrification if it's positive for the residents in that area. But I also hear you saying that you can go to, some people are able to go to city council and get certain things passed, whereas either we're not going or they're not listening. That's where I'm losing the disconnect.
Yeah. And I think you're right. I think that's the issue. I'm not sure if we're not going or we're not, or we're going and they're not hearing us, and it just becomes a, well, we're talking about it, we're working on it, you know, because we can, you know, and then what do you do at that point? Like, okay, well, they're working on it. So I don't know exactly where the disconnect is, because I think that you need some stuff coming in to just so people have basic needs met. I don't even think that's gentrifying. I just think that's bringing in basic needs. Somebody should not have to get on a bus to do their laundry. That's ridiculous. You shouldn't have to get on a bus to go grocery shopping. You should have something in your neighborhood where you can bank and shop and get the basic things you need, because it's everywhere else in the city. I should be able to go somewhere and get a meal and sit down, not have to order through plexiglass from, you know, at the Chinese restaurant. You should be able to do that. I think those are just basic things. I don't even know if that's gentrification so much as it is just, why isn't it here? Why is it everywhere else but here?
Well, certain businesses open up into your area. That increases your property value.
Mm-hmm.
It presents some type of stabilization for the declining area.
Right.
It brings more money into the fiscal location. I mean, makes the location have more fiscal revenue. It'll actually increase people like wanting to come to that area. Nobody wants to go to an area where you can't use the laundromat, or there's no laundromat,
exactly,
or there's no place to get medical like CVS, or nowhere to even just buy basic groceries. So I think what you're saying is those are the positive effects of gentrification. We need to bring these things in to stabilize the declining area, really reduce some of the strain on the infrastructure, you know, some of the services.
Yes.
Because
and it
now,
can create jobs.
Yes. So I don't. That's why I'm having a little bit of a disconnect in terms of why aren't residents of certain areas that having these signs of gentrification going on are not taking an active role before this happens to try to save their area, if it's really that important anymore. I mean, to be honest, when I think about the 1950s and 60s, people were poor, and they still would keep their area looking decent. There are places that I have driven where I'm looking at the city, and it's a complete mess. That tells me the residents don't care. They don't care. They don't care if they lose whatever. It's like there's no pride. There's no sense of ownership to anything anymore. So for me, I'm going to say this. If I see an opportunity, if I have money, and I see something that somebody doesn't want to take care of and I can see the value in it, yes, I'm going to, that's going to happen. But the community needs to wake up and understand that if you don't take pride in it and you don't take responsibility for it, if you don't go to the city council meetings and you don't ask for those things, you're not going to get it.
Yeah.
You can pay taxes
all you want
and think that because you pay taxes, it's going to work out for you. That ain't how it works.
It doesn't. And I agree with that. And that's why I said I don't know. I'm actually a resident of Maryland, so that's the other issue. I can't fight as much in D.C. because I actually own a house in Maryland. But so I don't have any voting rights here, unfortunately. But it's disheartening to see the city changing in a way that – and we aren't voicing it enough. That's probably what I would say. Now, there was a situation we had where we did come out, and it was I can laugh at it, I think, because I'm black, but I don't think anybody else thought it was it was funny. But there was and this was a bike lane story. There's a church in D.C., some of the churches that are deep in the city, like downtown, they can park diagonally on the street. They don't parallel park. They kind of back into the spaces, and so they can park more cars there. So one of the things they were fighting for was this protected bike lane right in front of this particular church. This church has been there for 90 years. They have done a lot for the city. They have affordable apartments in the area right around the corner from the church. And they were fighting to get this bike lane. At the time, I was working for the company that was fighting for it, and I was silent because I was like, I'm really not on this side of this because there's so many bike lanes down there and there's so many other lanes people can take. I wasn't seeing why it had to be right here. So they had this town hall meeting, and the people from the church bussed folks in. It was so many people that the fire marshal had to close it down. It was full of black people, and they were like, 15 white people there. They were all like, we got outnumbered, and they bust people in. I was kind of doing a Jesse Williams. They're like, yeah. Because they really underestimated. I think because we don't, I think that's true. I think we don't show up enough for things. But this was one that they were like, y'all ain't going to come in here and just run us out. It's not going to happen. We've been here 90 years. You've been here 8 months. It's not going to happen. And they were telling people that. They were like, how long have you been here? And they were like, I'm a resident. I've been here 5 years. They were like, I grew up here. I'm 70. So it was crazy. That was one we showed up for. I don't know what's going to happen with that. I don't know if they're going to reroute it. But I think the problem was that there wasn't conversation. And I think that's where the issue with gentrification comes in, is that it becomes this, we're doing this for you, and it's going to be awesome, and you're going to love it, and it's going to make the neighborhood better. And the people that are there are like, we don't want this. You know what would make my neighborhood better? Having a grocery store. You know what would make my neighborhood better? There's so many bigger problems that when somebody comes in and talks to them about something, they're like, yeah, that's not really my issue, though. That's not my issue for this neighborhood. You should talk to the residents here and see what the residents here would like. Because it's probably
I don't think they're considering that because they want to have the area. They use the gentrification as a justification to take the property. They're not going to
exactly.
say that. So I
no,
think
and they're not.
Time,
and that's why they're having just running some fights. You know, not physical fight, but I think that's why there is that fight against it, because people are saying, you know, you're coming in and changing everything, and we didn't ask for this. Kind of like, you know, like Brexit. Like, we didn't ask you to come in.
Yeah.
You're here.
Well, you know,
I
want to say this. I think change is good. And a lot of these cities that I have seen, I'm like, whoa, I can see. Like Philadelphia, I see people buying up land like left and right. And I can understand why they're getting these buildings and remodeling, because they're being left, they're being abandoned. they're just deteriorating. So there's an opportunity there. So I think change mm-hmm. is good, but I think I also believe that the people in that community have to step up and say, we want change, but we want change to look like this. If you allow yeah. people coming in to your area that has no association with that area, then that's where you're going to have the problem. And I also want to yeah. add that from my experience, and I'm going to tell you, and this is a little bit of off topic in terms of gentrification, but I think this is how it starts. People, black people, do not put as much value as they should in property, in land, mm-hmm. in owning it. My mother has over 30-something acres that she's saying verbally, I give that, my brother can do whatever he wants to with it. Now, there mm-hmm. is no will. There is, I don't know who's paying property taxes. I don't know what's going on with that. But the mere fact that my mother's saying, I have 30 acres and I don't care what happens, that is very mm-hmm. disturbing to me. Mm-hmm. And that's just on her side of the family. My father, who I know had much more land than my mother, my mom doesn't even care to share any of this information with us, her children. To me, I think that is so, and I love my mom, no disrespect, but it's very ignorant that we don't tell our family about what we have and take pride in what we have, especially when it comes to land and ownership and houses that can be passed upon generation on generation and trying to preserve parts of a community or parts of your own heritage. We don't do a good job about it. And then yeah. when they get wrapped up in taxes, or if I don't know anything about it, guess what? If that land, who my mom will not tell me about, who obviously will not will to my uncle, her brother, there's, when she dies, it's just going to be land that's on the docket. And it's going to go year after year of taxes accruing on mm-hmm. that land. And mm-hmm. once the state recognizes that and somebody sees that nobody is paying or this is not deeded to somebody, guess what? All they have to do is the bank can take it, and all somebody has to do is come and pay the taxes on it. Done deal. Mm-hmm. They make a yeah. listing in the newspaper saying, here's the property, whatever. If you're not reading that paper, guess what? They made it public knowledge. And guess what? It's gone. So
yep.
there are some things that we as black people, we need to get smart about. We need to educate ourselves about. And if you don't, if you know you have relatives that you think or you heard, go and research this up. Everything is, you can get information upon information that you wouldn't believe. I am going to Texas. I'm going to tell and say it right now. I'm going straight to the courthouse because I want to know what land my grandfather had that's willed to my father that should have been willed to me.
Mm-hmm.
And what my mom has and what she's going to do with that. And we're going to sit down and we're going to have a discussion because that is money. The only way yeah. that we're going to have some influence is we have to recognize what money looks like.
Yeah.
And in some cases, and in a lot of cases, it is property.
Yeah.
And we need
it
to be
property.
More responsible.
I think there's a definite lack of, I totally agree with that. I think there's a definite lack of knowledge about how things work, like just how this system works, be it law, be it finance,
yes.
property. There's a lack of knowledge of that. And so a lot of the stuff that I think we learn, unfortunately, in our community is very mythical in a lot of ways. And a lot of it is very, nonsensical. It doesn't even make any sense. And so, you know, like, for instance, and this is a little off topic, but this is where I knew folks did not understand government or law at all. When Trayvon Martin, when George Zimmerman was acquitted of killing Trayvon Martin, and I remember being in this Facebook group where everybody started saying, I'm going to stop drinking orange juice. I was floored. I was like, what? What does that have to do with anything? And so they were like, because oranges come from Florida, and I'm not supporting the stand your ground law.
By not drinking orange juice?
Yes. Okay, so you confused too. That's when I
okay.
knew, because I think I'd always thought that we knew, you know, we would look stuff up at the very least. I mean, we have Google, for goodness sake. I was listening to people who were like fist pumping this idea. I ain't drinking orange juice either. And I'm like, what the heck does that have to do with this case? I was like, what? I was like, we don't know the law at all. I was like, do you realize that you don't live in Florida? So you not drinking orange juice doesn't mean anything. If you're not a voter in Florida, this is kind of stupid. You might as well just go buy some Tropicana and be done with it. What? Are you, what? And so that that's when I realized we're not involved. Like we're like in the land of Facebook and Twitter law. And so we're just kind of going on what we think makes sense. I'm baffled by some of these things. I'm like, what does that have to do? What does boycotting Best Buy on Black Friday have to do with Black Lives Matter? Like, I'm just going, what did Best Buy do? What? So those are the kind of things where I'm like, we don't understand the law. We don't understand how that works. We don't understand property. Like you said, I have family like that too. My cousin's dad had 100 so acres of land. It's down to, I don't know, it's down to about 30 now, I guess, because people have just come on and squatted. They've just, and nobody fought it.
There's another thing that I've noticed that people do, but I think we used to do it a lot as a Black family, but now people are getting away from it because they think it's uncouth. But a lot of families will take out life insurance policies, period.
Mm-hmm.
They're not seeing it as, oh, my mom needs a life insurance policy just so she can be buried. People are taking out policies for passing on wealth. And we need to really think about that. If I'm going to die, which is inevitable, and say I have three kids, I should have life insurance, and they should all have life insurance on me, because when I die, they should be able to benefit. Some cases you get $250,000. That's something you could do something with. Or if I would take it out for my mom, I'm thinking, gosh, if she has all this land and she hasn't paid taxes for it, then this might be my opportunity to not just bury her, but to catch up on all the taxes and buy the land for my other siblings if they don't want it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But we only get life insurance policy because we want to bury somebody. And a lot of times we don't even have that. Everybody is scrambling, trying to bury poor Uncle Tom or whoever. And it's like, see, take these things as opportunities and not think of it as being, oh, I don't want to gain off my mom's loss, or I don't want to gain off my father's debt. You're not in the game. If you ain't, you're not trying. We're not even trying. And some of it could be as little as, what they say, 30 cents a month?
30 cents a day.
30 cents a day?
Yes.
Come on. We could do something. And I don't think we really are opening our minds up to think about what we're, other people are trying to make it, and they know that the world, we are too nice. We have gotten, ourselves trapped in a lot of things that we think are just unethical, and that's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
We need to use the system because it's there. And if you haven't figured, there's a way to work around it without being malicious, unlawful. There's loopholes and everything that we don't even try. Well, we
yeah.
don't. It's not
I just don't think we know.
We don't educate each other on it. We just
yeah.
don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we just don't know what the system is. What is the system? What is the game? How do I do it? And I think sometimes we're like, I'm just trying to get that. Like you can, I think there's so many people who are just like, I can't even think into July right now. I'm just let me get through today. Just let me deal with that. And unfortunately, it does. It does balloon and become a problem because, you know, you go to work. If you work a job and you're taking the metro or you have two jobs, you have kids, you probably are not thinking, oh, I need to go to this civic meeting so that I can talk about why, you know, Walmart not coming into town, or I could talk about, you know, not bringing in another stadium or not doing whatever. And so those things, they have those meetings, but if they don't have people show up to the meetings, the people who do come get what they want. I mean, why not?
Yeah.
Nobody's arguing against it.
Yeah, I'm going to say this. I think that we have become selfish, period. We used to talk about our grandparents that would save money, that would show us how to save money, even in the most dire needs of times, when they didn't have a job or when they were barely making pennies. We have become so selfish and so focused on spending money for the here and now or how we feel right there in the moment. We don't have any care or compassion for the next generation, and we need to wake up. We need to wake up. Our grandparents did not raise you and I this way. They made a way for us, some kind of way, whether that was socially, politically, financially. And what are we doing for the next generation right now? What are we doing?
Yeah, there was definitely more of a community that, you know, that we had. And just amongst our community, there was more of a community feel. Everybody kind of took care of each other. You looked out for each other. You know, I've said this before, it's embarrassing. I'm like, I've been in my house 8 years. I don't know my neighbors. That's terrible. There used to be a time on my grandmother's block, you left the door open. You knew everybody on the block, and you didn't mess up because you knew that they would tell, you know, your mother, your grandmother what you were doing. You know,
Now
today, you just, you know, you're right. I think as a society, we become that way. I was watching a movie this weekend. I'll put it sort of as they recommend, but it was Michael Moore's latest documentary is called Where Should We Invade Next? And, you know, he always has kind of a comedic twist to his documentaries. But he's like, you know, instead of going to some, you know, Arab country and trying to take their oil, or going to, you know, Africa and trying to take, you know, their metals or diamonds, I'm gonna go to Europe and see what I can take. So he goes there, but one of the places he goes, towards the end of the movie, he goes to Iceland, and he interviewed three women who were CEOs of a company, and one of the women said, you could not pay me to live in America. She said, you all are so selfish. It's always about me. And she said, the reason things work here is because we think about the community. It's what's good for everybody, not just what's good for me. And it was like, I mean, it was like a mic drop. She just stopped talking. And you're like, she's right. That's exactly what we do. It's how can I get ahead? How far can I get? What do I need to do? There isn't that sense of community. There isn't that sense of let's take care of everybody anymore. We don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
That would make America great again, if that's what Trump was talking about, which I don't think he is. But that would make America better. I don't know about great, but it would make it better if we thought about
it. I'm not even worried about America no more. I'm talking about us as black people. We need to come together. We're going to have to because we cannot keep relying or hoping and wishing and dreaming for somebody else to do it for us. We're going to have to do it ourselves. We're going to have to.
I agree. I think one of the problems is that because we've tried to assimilate into the dominant culture, that's where it kind of comes in. If you're in a culture that says, you know, it's me, and you have to assimilate into the it's me culture, it becomes that way. And then you start doing the whole, like, well, I'm taking care of me. Why you ain't taking care of you? What's going, you know, you start doing that because that's the culture that you're trying to assimilate into.
Yeah. Well, we realized that assimilation ain't working.
It's not working very well, no.
No. It's not. I think it's actually creating self-hatred in a weird sort of way. It's making us hate ourselves and hate and go against each other instead of saying, nope, this is the way we are. This is how we are. This is how we love. This is how we express ourselves. This is the multiple shades of which we are, and we love each other, and we're going to make it happen. We're going to do what we do because we've been doing what we do. And we can make it. I think that they have beat us down so much, and we've been trying to reach to them to help pull us up. And we just, now it's just a point where there's a dire need, and we're just going against each other. I think if we realize our power, if we realize how much energy, positive energy and forcefulness and greatness that we have amongst Black people, if we really give ourselves credit and say we are the ones that made this country, we made the United States, if we have the ability to make the USA what it is today, we have the power to go on our own and do it ourselves. We're going to have to.
Yeah.
But this pleading and begging and waiting and relying on the judicial system and trying to get into legislation and trying to do this and switch, it's impossible because that's not, to be honest, our personality is not that way in terms of born and conquering and taking over. And we are creative in terms of art and energy and positivity and love, and we're much more creative. We're not, a lot of us are not monetarily focused.
No. That's funny you say that. And this is another one that I may or may not recommend, but I'm reading this book now. It's called Post-Traumatic Syndrome. It is really interesting. You said something that made me think about it. In the book, she's talking about the effects, the trauma that happens or has happened to Black people from slavery, that there was, you know, we didn't get any counseling, we didn't go to therapy, we didn't get any of that stuff. We were just freed as slaves and was like, you know, figure it out. And you need to know how to read, too, although we haven't taught you how to read in 400 years. Figure that out, you know. And somehow we survived. We're very resilient, resourceful people. But she does, she talks about this thing in the book, that what you just said when you think of it. She said, when I'm teaching, she said, a lot of people would think that Black children can't learn, or they, you know, they're not as smart or whatever. She said, but we learn differently. And she said, we're very much social. We're very community oriented as a people. And she said, and we're very rhythmic. She's like, you know, we joke about not being on time. She said, but we do things on a rhythm. You came home when the streetlights came on in the city. That's when you came home. It wasn't like be home at six. That's what you did.
Yeah.
And so, she said, so when you see us, we're not late just because we're, you know, being late. We're, you know, it's just that's when we got up and decided to move. That's why they joke about, you know, what time is the cookout? The 1 o'clock cookout starts at what, 4? You know, like we all, that's when you do stuff.
When and the meat is ready. That's when it's all.
Right, when the meat is right. Right. You know, the grocery store at 1 o'clock. What are you talking about? So she's talking about that, but she goes into this part about education, and she said, when I'm teaching, she said, when I used to teach middle school, she said, you can motivate white kids for a really long time with stickers and like tangible monetary kind of thing, trinkets kind of thing. She said, you can only do that with Black students one or two times. She said, because what Black students want is that social and that familial connection. And so she said, what you'll hear sometimes a Black child say is, my teacher doesn't like me. You'll hear them say that. And I was like, I have heard kids say that. And she said, what they're saying is the teacher isn't rewarding them. They might want a hug. They might just want to be told, you're doing great. They're not getting that. They're getting stickers. And they're like, oh, what about this sticker? And so she told it. She said, and we learned through stories. And so she told us, she had these four people come in. They were viewing her class. And so it was all Latino and black students there. These four white guys came in. She handed them the quiz she was going to talk about, and they were in the back of the room like, yeah, right, they're not going to be able to answer these questions. Ha, 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 they, you know, they're doing that. She said, just watch. So she started out, it was a test, it was a quiz, it was a class on drugs. And she said, she started out, she said, amphetamines bring you up, barbiturates bring you down. She had to repeat it. She said something similar again, she had to repeat it. And then she told this story that happened in a neighborhood she lived in. And at each part of the story she would get to, she's like, so what was this person on? And they would go, barbiturate. And she said, why? Because their heart rate slowed down. And then she gets to another part of the story, she's like, and what was this person on? Amphetamines. And they would go, why? Because their heart rate was speeding. And she went through the whole story. She'd actually given the quiz within the story. And the guys in the back were like, what? Mouth dropped. And so she said, they just learn differently. You can't stick standardized tests in front of everybody and expect them to get it. That's not how they learn. And they, and she said, and I would, you know, she said, I hugged my kids. I told them they were doing great. She said, sometimes I walk past their desk and just say, you know what? That's awesome. You're doing a great job. She said, that's what those kids want. They don't want a sticker. They don't want these little charts with little stars on them. That's not what those
the
kids,
star.
They don't respond to that. It's a good book. I'm just about a third of the way through it, so I can't quite recommend it yet. But it's right now I'm at a point where I'm like, this is fascinating that you're finally giving some
again?
Insight. It's called Post Traumatic Slave Syndrome by Joy DeGruy. It's DeGruy. DeGruy. I'm not sure how you pronounce it. But
degree? It could be. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Very good book. Very good book. So far, I'm enjoying it. And it's just fascinating to hear someone kind of put together why we act the way we do. And that it's not just it's not just us being, it's not lazy. It's something in us that, like you said, I think, And I've talked with my fiance Jeff. He's white, and I've asked Jeff these questions. I was like, Jeff, what is it? And he was like, white people like to own stuff. He said, that's just it. He said, we like to take stuff and own it. It's not something that, and he told me, he said, it's not something that most other cultures have. He said, if you look at Native Americans, you look at Africans, you look at other cultures, they understand that the land gives to them, and they give back to the land. That's how they live. You plant stuff. You plant a seed, it gives you food to eat. You have animals on the land. When you kill it, you have meat. You have clothing. You have a lot of stuff from it. He's like, white people don't think like that. We want to own it.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really, I mean, I don't even know what to argue. I can't even argue it. I'm like, okay, why? You're like, you want to just go, why? Like, what? Why can't you just, and why do you have to go in? I get that maybe you want to own stuff, but why do you have to go in and take it from other people and just tear it up? Like, why does it have to be that way? It's like, because we want to own it.
Yeah, they want to put their stamp on it.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Anyway.
He's like, I'm not saying it's right. He said, I'm just explaining that that's what it is. And that's kind of, I guess, full circle, kind of goes back to a little bit about gentrification. I want to own it. I want this because it's here. It's here and it's near the subway and it's convenient for me and I don't have to, you know, get in my car and drive. I can get rid of my car and I can bike to work and it's great. This is awesome.
And it's cheap. And
yeah.
I have money that I can do something different with it and I can revitalize this place. I can do a whole, but
yeah.
They can become, you know, that's just what they want it to be.
Yeah, and I would be okay with that on some levels if it was a similar, like the way we're expected to assimilate, if they would assimilate like that with us. Like I did a workshop a few last year.
That ain't gonna never happen.
And it was about so often I'm just like, God, I wish you could just go with what's here, and then maybe it will change. Maybe we'll see it too. But you can't come, you know, it's hard to come into the city and want things to be so different. I did this workshop, we're talking about street harassment. For me, honestly, and I told the workshop people, I said, you know, I didn't consider any of the things you'd say street harassment. Like, she was like, well, what do you consider street harassment? I'm like, mugging, rape, you know, like, but the things they were saying were like, if a guy walks up to you and he tells you to smile, that's street harassment. I was like, what? Really? You know, if he, you know, if he's catcalling, that's street harassment. And so some of the women were giving examples of what, you know, something had happened since they moved to the city. Most of them were things like that, like somebody walking down the street and somebody said, hey, I like your skirt. And they were like, why are you talking about my skirt? And I'm like, you know, it's just... like, he called me pretty. You're like, okay. Is that really street harassment because somebody said you were pretty? Like you, okay. And so I was having a really hard time empathizing because I'm like, you're also in an area, but this is maybe this, and maybe I'm wrong, but this is something that just happens in D.C. It's so part of the culture that you're just like, you just turn around. Sometimes you just keep biking or walking. Sometimes you smile. Sometimes you just say thank you. I mean, I had a homeless guy last year, not a tooth in his head, invite me on a date to have crab legs with him under a bridge. That's the kind of city this is. And you just go, thank you. No, you just keep going. Like, and it's something, it's a story. It doesn't become this, I need to tweet about it and call the police. And so the uptightness of coming to a city that no one asked you to come to and become and be part of that community, to be uptight about all of it is kind of like, okay, it's too much. And I think that's, for me, that's where I get like, okay, that's too much. Like, you can't come here.
I think that's, and then I think that's probably that part of the process. It. I think that's part of the process, Renee. So if I can create an unreasonable law, and you know who most of those people are going to be saying stuff and speaking will probably be us. So that's a way to get them out of the way.
Yeah.
That's a way to change the perception about the neighborhood and promote cleaning it up and fixing it, and because you have too much of this going on.
Yeah. And that's pretty much what happens, and so everything changes. Those those people end up moving out, or there becomes a lot of animosity in the area. You stay, but then there's this there really is no community, because now I feel like I can't be myself here. You don't like me because I'm being me. I don't like you because you're you. And so now you have this, you know, you have all this tension in an area that didn't have that before, and it didn't need to have that. Sometimes you just have to assimilate with the culture. Say thank you and keep moving. It's not that big a deal. Maybe it is.
I don't think
it's that big a deal.
I watch House Hunters and all that stuff on HGTV, and it no matter what place these people go to look for a home, they don't want to necessarily, well, I would say 80% of the time, they want to either make it like where they've come from before,
mm-hmm.
but they never consider the culture or what's going on there. That's just the way it is.
It drives me crazy. I'm like, well, why not stay in America? Why are you going to Costa Rica and asking them to put in plumbing for a bathtub or whatever? I'm like, you can shower outdoors. Do you know how awesome that is? No, I need a tub. Really? Oh, now they got to screw up the entire plumbing system for you. It's just like, why can't you just go and work with the people there? I don't get it. I don't get it. Because everyone else is expected to do that when we go there. So that's where I'm having that, like, that's where gentrification for me is like nails on a chalkboard. It's like, why can't you just come and just go with the flow and learn the flow, and then maybe the flow will, you know, detour. But how can you come and change the flow as soon as you get here? You don't even know what's here.
Well, you know what, Renee? I know that's one of the things that's like nails on a chalkboard for you. But I want Black people to realize that gentrification can be a good thing if you're involved in the community and you're going to the meetings, because there is money set aside to help neighborhoods. We just don't know about it, and they have to spend it. And other people come in and come up with these crazy ideas and ways to spend that money. But there's money that's allocated to your area, to your location, that gentrification can be a positive thing for your area. We just need to get involved, know what's going on, figure out where those funds are coming from and who they, how they can be used, and get in on the city council and be part of the change instead of part of the complaining. We need to, you know, get ourselves educated and get ourselves involved and really take an active role. And it's impossible for people to not be residents of that area all the time to be able to make decisions and rules about your area. And there is tax money and funding going into that area. We just have to know where to get it. It's there. That's why you get bike paths.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to figure out some way to spend that money in that community. And what better way is to fix it for me? That's the only thing that's suitable to them, is to get a bike path so I can survey the area and figure out what I want. We need to figure out that we don't want bike paths, but we want that money to do something for your neighborhood. So it can be a good thing. There's money there, but you have to be involved.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. I think it's a complicated thing. And I think what's traditionally been happening is that it moves people out because property taxes do get raised and then people can't afford to live there. It's more that than having something
like,
you
vote.
Yes, we want that, but you also want
property raised
to hear what we want.
But you vote to get property raised, and they give you a reason to why they think they want to raise the property taxes, and you have to vote on that.
Yes. But I think that's more of the issue, that if you come in and you're building, you know, condos that only the wealthy can live in, you know, $4,000 or $5,000 a month apartments, and suddenly you're like, I can't afford to live here. I've got to move. The rents go up, the mortgages go up, the property taxes go up. Everything kind of happens that way, and then suddenly you're like, I have to go to Maryland. I can't afford to live here. That's where it looks very racially driven. That's where it looks very, because all of a sudden it's like, well, I've been living here all this time, and now all of a sudden somebody came in and, you know, they built this place, this government building, and now all these people want to move closer to the government building. So they built something for them to move here, and now I can't stay here. I can't stay here for $1,000 a month like I've been staying. I can stay, but I'm now going to have to pay $3,000 a month.
Well, I think it's a natural progression. There's things that are going on. There's talk. There's planning. There's people congregating and getting together to be able to change that and do that. We just got to get in the mix of it.
Yeah. We have to get in the mix and want the change, because what it seems like also happens is that if you don't want it, then nothing comes. So you don't want that. And you also want people to hear, you want those people to hear what it is that you would like, not just, well, this is what we're offering, because it's very
exactly
different. That's often how it comes to us. It comes as, well, this is what we have. This is what we're doing for you. It comes like that, as opposed to, what would you all like? And that's something that you don't get a lot here. You don't get a lot of people just coming and finding out what the people actually want. People are coming in and saying, this is what we're giving you. And that may or may not be it. And I've talked to a lot of people that go to these meetings, and they're white people that go, and they're going for some, you know, sometimes it's for biking, they're going for some reason. And I usually tell them, do not do that. I'm telling you, this is not an issue for them. These bike lanes are not their top priority. It's just not. Like, I would go, but you need to find out what is the issue for that area. You're thinking it's bike lanes.
They're not worried about the people in the community. They're telling you they want to ride in that community. They don't care about the community.
That's what they're saying. Well, you know, because different organizations will come in and say, well, this is what we're giving this area. And it's like, this isn't what that area is asking for. This area is asking for a hospital. They're like, but we're offering streetcars. Like, we don't want a streetcar. Nobody is asking for streetcars. We're asking for a hospital. Why do people have to travel all the way across town when they're having a heart attack? They should not have to do that. And then they're just kind of like, well, we're offering a streetcar. You're like, okay, we're at an impasse. Cause no, you're not hearing me. This is not what the community is asking for. So that becomes, I mean, and I give that example because that actually happened. We nobody wanted the streetcar we have now. And, you know, we'll talk to non-black people who are like, the streetcar is awesome. Like, it doesn't even go anywhere. It does not even connect metro stations. It literally runs 2 miles up and down a street. That's it. That's it. It's for people who are going to the bar at one end of the block, you know, down at mile at 3rd Street, who don't want to walk up to 10th Street. That's what it's for. It's so useless. But you will hear white people talk about this streetcar like it is, you know, the second coming of Jesus. Black folks are like, there's so much more we could have done with that money in the city than that. And that very well could be true, but
that's therein lies the problem. We're not telling them what we need.
That was a huge problem because D.C. isn't its own, is a district that's run by sort of the council and Congress. So if Congress says, no, you need a streetcar, we just get a streetcar. It doesn't matter what the people say. Congress says you need a streetcar, you get a streetcar.
Okay.
So that's kind of how things work. Unfortunately, it's not like a state where what we say actually means something. Congress could come in at any point. You know, there was a vote for guns, for handguns. That was illegal in D.C. for years. And we all voted against it, and Congress said, nope, Second Amendment, everybody can, you know, you can have guns. We're like, what? We voted against it, and people voted against it. Marijuana was the same thing. Nope, it's legal. Y'all can have it. We're like, we didn't want it. So things like that happen in D.C. because it's a district. It's not its own state. So you're not quite under the same freedom as you are in a state, in a real state. You get some representation and stuff. It's an interesting little place, but I don't know that that's happening in other places that are gentrifying like that. Like, I was in New York earlier this month. I've seen the gentrification there. It runs people out. The diversity is lacking, you know, which is another issue, I think, with gentrification, is that it doesn't create diversity. It creates huge pockets of segregation. So it would be nice if everybody could stay, and you could have these diverse communities where people are bringing the best parts of their stuff to each other, but that doesn't really happen. Uh-oh. Rhonda?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, there you are. All right, so we've talked about gentrification. Next week we are taking off because it's the 4th of July. We will be back on July 11th, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll be back July 11th. I'll post the topic up there then because I don't know what it is yet. We haven't discussed what our next topic is going to be. Do you have a Rhonda recommends before we go?
I have a slight recommendation.
Okay.
Well, I guess it's not a recommendation. I don't have any recommendation. I have a challenge. Based on our show from last week, I was, like, really concerned. I was like, wow, why can't I name all of these beautiful black women to have the discussion with you? So I just challenge all of us that are listening, and what I did it myself, or I had a little bit of help. I wanted to know how many positive black women roles there were out there, and I was completely surprised. I'm going to say this, Renee, they look more like you than they did me, or right in the middle of our skin tone in terms of colorism. So I will put that on Facebook and let you have a look.
Okay.
Like I said, I was surprised. I knew that I felt like there were more representatives in terms of the medium to I guess dark color. I have no idea what colorism is, what the color spectrum is, who's honey brown or brown chocolate, whatever the color. So I have no clue.
But I did want to take a look in my family because you would know. You would know from blue, black to clear. That was my grandfather's characterization. We knew all of it. Yes.
So I was really surprised to see that there are more. There's more. I don't know. There's more Lupita than there are Beyonce. So.
All right.
And again, that may not mean much because I don't know what the color spectrum on the color spectrum. I couldn't even find my own color. I don't know what that is. So, but I hope that we can find the challenges. Hopefully, we can find more positive role models for which we can correlate, or you know, or use as examples of where we are in that color spectrum, or even just celebrate each other's color, no matter what color we tone we are from African all the way to Asian. It's just color. We all want the same things in life: to live and love and be successful.
All right. Well, I've sort of recommended one and a half, because I haven't finished the book, so I don't want to fully recommend it. But I would definitely say if you get a chance, it's on Amazon, to watch Michael Moore's movie, Where to Invade Next. It is a fascinating look at other countries. Yes, he does pull out the best of it. Yes, he does pull out some of the worst things of America to compare them. I'm totally okay with that bias. but it was just interesting to see some of the things that these European countries are doing that they actually got from us. And I think every country said that, like, we got that from you guys, stuff that we don't do, like 8 weeks vacation and free school for all, like, you know, school lunches that look like food and not slop. Like, it was just amazing to watch. My other thing I'm going to recommend, and this is going to be kind of crazy, maybe, but I am fascinated with ESPN's documentary on O.J. Simpson, Made in America. I didn't know a lot about O.J. Like, if you had asked me who he played football for, I could not have told you. I knew about Nicole Brown. I knew he had a wife before her. He was cheating on her with Nicole. I knew he had kids. I knew some things. I knew that he was OJ. He wasn't black. He had transcended race in that way that I don't know anybody ever has before. But then he became black. Trust me. Later. But I'm fascinated with the amount of information, the background that they've given about the LAPD, the background about OJ, the trial, the marriage, everything. It is a fascinating document. If you get to watch it, it's on demand. It's on ESPN. It's called OJ, Made in America. I still have to watch part five, but the first four parts are so, Jeff and I were like, we were at the TV like, oh my God, this is so good. What's the next one? They're all like five movies. It's like they're all an hour and a half long, so they're pretty long. But and we binge watched it, but really interesting if you get a chance to watch it. And maybe I'll talk about it on some show one day. what all of that meant? How OJ? I think the most fascinating thing to me was that OJ, who did not consider himself black, became the civil rights face in his trial. I thought the irony of that was amazing to me, how they used that when he never considered himself black. Very interesting. So that's my recommendation. And you can watch it online. If you go to ESPN, you can watch it there if you don't have it on demand. So with that, we'll close out. You all have a fabulous and happy 4th of July. If you're having a cookout at 1 that starts at 4. And Rhonda, you have a safe trip to Texas. I'll be at my cousin's wedding this weekend, so that's what I'm going to be doing. And other than that, we'll see you guys on July 11th. We'll be back with a brand new show. So thanks for joining us, and I'll play the music. Hold on, Rhonda. Hold on. Thank you.
Bye.
Goodbye.
I'll talk to you later.
All right. Bye.
Bye.